out of spring or an itch.
Welcome to another edition of Hey Doc. I'm Dr. Harold Laskey, medical director and physician at Southside Medical Center, right here in Jacksonville, Florida. I'm your host for the next half hour. With me today is my co-host and wife, Carmen Laskey, a certified EMT. Together, we hope that you will find the show informative, educational, as well as entertaining. Well, Carmen, today's going to be our 160th show.
Actually, we have done a lot more medical radio shows since starting the Ask the Doc show in 1988.
Okay, you're right. Let's just celebrate our 160th Hey Doc show right here on WBOB Radio. That means that last week was our three-year anniversary here.
Happy anniversary.
So what do you think would be a good topic for today's show?
Since we are doing a radio show, let's talk about vision.
Ah, the vision.
As the pieces fall into place for the Avengers sequel, Age of Ultron, but who is this android Avenger anyway? Here's everything you need to know about the Vision.
No, not the comic book hero. I mean your vision.
I don't think that I've had any real visions, you know, like seeing the future.
Again, not that kind of vision. Let's talk about to see with your eyes, not the ability to think about or plan the future. With imagination or wisdom, we will leave that to another show, maybe next week.
There are many different parts of the eye that help to create vision. Light passes through the cornea, the clear dome-shaped surface that covers the front of the eye. The cornea bends or refracts this incoming light.
Behind the pupil is the lens, a clear part of the eye that further focuses light or an image onto the retina.
The retina is a thin, delicate, photosensitive tissue that contains the special photoreceptor cells, which convert light into electrical signals. These electrical signals are then processed, and they travel from the retina of the eye to the brain through the optic nerve, which happens to be a bundle of, about 1 million nerve fibers. We, could say we see with our brains. Our eyes collect visual information and begin this complex process.
Sight is one of our most complex senses, but have you ever stopped to wonder just how eyes work?
The process of human vision is really pretty amazing.
Our eyes are organs, just like our heart, kidneys, and our skin. Eye anatomy is incredibly complex. Each eye has over 2 million working parts.
These include the external structures like your eyelids. These offer protection to your eyes. Then we've got the sclera and the cornea, and those cover and help protect the eye's interior. Now, Carmen has some fun facts for you here.
Did you know that eye blinking happens about 12,000 times for each of us as we go about our day? And that the cornea is the only structure in our body that doesn't have blood vessels. Our blood delivers oxygen to our body part, but the cornea gets it directly from the air. Why? Transparency. It's necessary for clear vision.
Now that we understand what's on the outside of our eyes, let's take a look at what's located inside, and then we can answer the question of how do we see an object, like the rising sun or our favorite breakfast plate. The main interior structures of our eyes includes the iris, that's the colored part of your eye, the pupil, the black circular opening in the center of the iris, and that's what lets in light. Then we come to a crystalline lens, and it's suspended behind the iris, and allows you to focus on the near and the far objects. Finally, but we have the retina, which is a very thin layer of millions of photoreceptors, and these are called rods and cones.
As you greet each day, light enters the eye through your cornea and your pupils. If you are in a dark room and turn on bright lights, your pupils constrict to reduce the amount of light. The opposite happens if you walk from bright sunshine into a darkened room.
After the light passes through your pupils and the lens, it focuses on the retina. And here's the surprising part. The image flips upside down on the back of your eye. As light reaches the back of your eye, it travels along nerves in your retina that come together as a bundle. These images then travel all the way to your brain through the optic nerves. As your brain processes this information, it flips the image again, so we don't see the world upside down.
Having less than perfect vision is often the result of genetics. If your parents wore corrective lenses at a young age, then it's likely you'll need them early on in your life as well.
When the light enters your eyes, it focuses it in front of the retina rather than directly on it. That's why you experience the nearsightedness. Objects at a distance will be blurry. Now, if you have myopia, it may be that your eyes are actually larger than normal. The purpose of the eye is to take in light and translate the images that the brain can understand. The retina contains the light-sensitive tissue.
But let's follow a candlelight as it passes through these structures. First, the light is bent as it goes through the cornea. This is called refraction of light. If you wear glasses, you may have heard your eye doctor or the optometrist say that he is calculating the refraction needed to make your lenses.
Anyway, light is refracted as it goes through the cornea, and then it's bent a second time as it passes through the lens. Once it hits the retina, as we said, the image is upside down and reversed, meaning top is bottom and right is left. It takes the brain to fix that and to see the image right side up and right as right. After the retina changes the image to electrical stimuli, the nerve impulses travel down each of the optic nerves, one from the right eye and, of course, one from the left, to the back of the brain where the occipital lobe resides. And this is where the image regains its normal perspective. Before we get to the rest of the anatomy, let's look at two common eye problems, nearsightedness and farsightedness.
In nearsightedness, the person with the disease can see close objects in focus, but sees far objects as blur and out of focus. The opposite is farsightedness, where the person sees far objects in focus and near objects, like reading a book out of focus.
The eyeball is not a perfect sphere. In other words, it's not perfectly round. A normal eye is slightly taller and less deep, meaning that it looks kind of flattened, as if someone was pressing on the front of the eye. But what happens in an eye that is elongated? That is when there's more distance between the lens and the retina than normal. Then the focal point, that's where the light image is sharpest, is in front of the retina. This makes it difficult to see things that are far away.
So a person with a long eye is said to be nearsighted. That is why a nearsighted person can use glasses with a concave lens, which pushes the focal point back in the eye and focuses it right on the retina. It does this by widening the plane of light as it goes through the cornea.
In farsightedness, the focal point is too short, and the lens focuses the light behind the retina. This necessitates an eyeglass lens that is more convex and pulls the focus point forward, again, to focus on the retina. But let's continue on with the anatomy for a brief period. Between the cornea and the lens is a space that's filled with fluid called the aqueous humor. This helps keep the space of the eye, for without the fluid, the soft cornea would kind of collapse inwards.
As light goes through this liquid in the anterior chamber of the eye, it passes through the iris, which is the black space that we see in the center of the eye.
Surrounding this space is the iris, which works like a diaphragm of a camera, letting in as much or as little light as necessary for good image. At this point, the light passes through the lens, which also happens to divide the inside of the eye into two sections. The first we call the anterior chamber, and the posterior one is now called the vitreous body. This chamber is also filled with fluid and keeps the eye's shape generally roundish.
If you have ever wondered how the eye focuses, it does this by using two small muscles in the ciliary bodies. When these muscles tighten, they stretch the lens a little bit, just enough to thin it out and change its focus, just like the lenses in a camera. However, the camera does not use liquid like lenses. Instead, it moves different lenses close and farther away to get the same effect.
Once the light gets to the retina, it stimulates different structures, and these are called rods and cones. Rod photoreceptors detect motion. They provide black and white vision only and function well in low light. On the other hand, cones are responsible for central vision and color vision. And these, well, they perform best in medium and bright light.
Rods are located throughout the retina, while cones are concentrated in a small central area of the retina called the macula. At the center of the macula is a small depression called the fovea. The fovea contains only cone photoreceptors and is the point in the retina responsible for maximum visual acuity and color vision.
All photoreceptor cells take light focused by the cornea and lens and convert it into a chemical and nervous signal, which are located and transported to visual centers in the brain by way of the optic nerve. In the visual cortex of the brain, these signals are converted into images and visual perceptions. There are also blood vessels that provide nutrition to the cells of the retina. After all, most human cells need energy to continue. It's time for our mid-show break, so Carmen and I will be back in just a moment.
This is a great time to tell you about Southside Medical Center. I'm Dr. Harold Lasky, and I've been the medical director and physician at Southside Medical Center for the past 29 years. We're located at 3604 Southside Boulevard, just two blocks south of the Beach Boulevard intersection between the Pottsburg Post Office and the Tulsa Welding School. We will treat your pains, sprains, and strains. Our practice emphasizes chronic pain management as well as anti-aging medicine. We also have an office-based substance treatment program for those who need it. Southside Medical Center is open 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. Monday through Friday. If you would like to make an appointment or ask any questions about Southside Medical Center, please call us at 641-4411. That's 641-4411. Southside Medical Center, where your health is our primary care.
Welcome back to the Hey Doc Show. I see that most of you have returned after the first half of the show when we were talking about vision. Well, all this talk of vision made me think of chickens. Why do chickens bob their heads when they walk? To explain this, let's look at the pigeon first. They bob their heads when they walk and pick up scraps of food.
What the head bobbing lets pigeons do is momentarily fixate their eyes on objects. This gives the photoreceptors in their eyes enough time, about 20 milliseconds, to build a steady scene of the sidewalk world. And this has nothing to do with their bird-sized brains.
Vision just doesn't mix well with movement. All animals, from insects to eagles, have tricks that they use to stabilize the world in their vision. Many mammals, humans included, do this with slight twitches of the eye. Now, this is instinctual, and it comes from neuromuscular connections between our eyes and the part of the brain that tracks movement and rotation. Pigeons are able to move their eyes, but their longer, more flexible necks make it more efficient for them to do this motion, tracking with their necks.
How did the scientists prove this? Well, they put pigeons on a treadmill covered with plexiglass box so the birds couldn't fly away, and observed that their heads did not move when their surroundings were stationary as they walked.
Actually, they're not bobbing their heads. What they're doing is, as they move their heads, and their eyes, of course, the eyes lock in place while their body catches up. Then the heart darts forward again, locks onto something new, and the pigeon's body keeps moving forward. In the same study as the treadmill experiment, researchers filmed pigeons in their natural environment. Then, frame by frame, they analyzed the movement of the bird's head, feet, and bodies and confirmed that the head bob was just an illusion. But let's get back to our chickens. A major difference between our vision and a chicken's is that chickens have tetrachromatic vision, while we only have trichromatic. Did you know that? Well, neither did I, until I went to chickenology classes here. Anyway, in English, chickens have four wavelengths that they're sensitive to. We have only three: red, green, and blue. The chicken's eye also sees the red, green, and blue. But, and this is a big but,
oh my God, Becky, look at her butt.
But they're also sensitive to ultraviolet light. This may just sound interesting at first glance, but believe me, the implications are actually staggering.
The fact that chickens see an extra sector of the light spectrum means that everything they see looks different from what we see. Their concept of the green color of grass is as different as our comparison of aquamarine and the color of grass.
We as humans have no concept or description for how much UV is reflected from any surface. There is evidence that birds can find direction by looking at the sky and seeing the gradation of UV light and knowing which way is north as easily as you or I look at a grayscale drawing and know which side is closer to white. It also means that we have a really hard time understanding what they're seeing. Now, chickens do have a disability when compared to us. Their night vision is poor. And this is a big part of the reason that chickens need protection at night from predators. Remember that we said that the retina in mammals is made up of rods and cones? Rods to see at night and cones to see color.
Chickens have very few cones, and even these are not very sensitive. These differences are really explained by evolution and necessity.
Also, remember that mammals almost disappeared long ago, and the only types of mammals that survived were nocturnal and insect eaters. So as time went on, mammals that survived this redeveloped color vision after millions of years. However, we evolved our cones from a different starting point than birds, who evolved theirs from dinosaurs. As a matter of fact, I just recently read some articles where scientists now believe that birds actually are dinosaurs.
Birds' color vision is also different from ours because they have color filters mixed in with their nerve cells, literally little colored drops of oil that filter out different wavelengths.
This is like wearing yellow goggles when skiing on a bright day, which appears to enhance the contrast we see. Now, just imagine wearing yellow and blue and red goggles all at the same time. It increases contrast and brightness and sensitivity all at once. And, well, we mammals can't do that. Birds and mammals, they have a structure called a fovea in their retinas also. In both birds and mammals, it acts as an image enlarger. Chickens have two foveas, one for distant vision and one for close, kind of like built-in bifocals. Now let's get back to our vision, human vision. There is a wide variety of retinal problems, conditions, and diseases. Carmen and I are now going to start with macular degeneration, which is the most common serious age-related eye disease.
It affects over 9 million Americans and more than 30% of seniors over age 75. Remember that the macula is the small central area of the retina of the eye that controls visual acuity.
The health of the macula determines our ability to read, recognize faces, drive, watch television, use a computer, and perform other visual tasks that require us to see fine detail. There are two types, wet and dry. Dry is also called non-neovascular, while wet is referred to as neovascular.
You may not be familiar with those terms. Neovascular simply means that the disease is associated with growth of new blood vessels in an area, such as the macula, where they are not supposed to be.
Macular degeneration mainly affects central vision, right in the middle, and it causes blind spots directly ahead of us. Over 90% of AMD is of the dry form, while the wet form, that's more serious. Dry AMD is an early stage of the disease and may result from the aging and thinning of macular tissues with the deposit of pigment in the macula.
Dry macular degeneration is often diagnosed when yellowish spots are seen by the eye doctor to accumulate in and around the macula. Gradual central vision loss may occur with dry macular degeneration, but again, usually not nearly as severe as occurs in wet AMD.
Several clinical studies have shown that nutritional treatments with diets containing antioxidant vitamins and multivitamins that also contain lutein and zeaxanthin can reduce the risk of dry AMD progressing to sight-threatening wet AMD. But unfortunately, no study demonstrated any preventive benefit of nutritional supplements against the development of dry AMD in healthy eyes.
Currently, it appears the best way to protect your eyes from developing early dry macular degeneration is to eat a healthy diet, exercise, and wear sunglasses that protect your eyes from the sun's harmful UV rays and high-energy visible HEV radiation.
But there is something that many people can do to help prevent macular degeneration. Now, I'm going to scream it out to you here. You know what that is? Stop smoking. Smoking happens to be the major AMD risk factor and was found in one British study to be directly associated with about 25% of all AMD cases that caused severe vision loss. And another study showed that people living with a smoker doubled their risk of developing AMD. There are also some drugs like arylenthorazine, melaroprolixin, trilofan, and stelazine that have been linked to AMD. For wet AMD, treatments are aimed at stopping the abnormal blood vessel growth. Now, this includes some FDA-approved drugs called Lucentis, Eylea, Macugen, and Visodyne.
As far as nutrition is concerned, some studies have suggested a diet that includes plenty of salmon and other cold water fish, which contains high amounts of omega-3 fatty acids, may help prevent AMD or reduce the risk of its progression.
Other studies have shown that supplements containing, as I said before, lutein and xanthan increase the density of pigments in the macula that are associated with protecting the eyes from AMD. There are many other diseases, but today we'll just quickly go over a little bit on diabetic retinopathy. One of the devastating consequences of diabetes is damage to the blood vessels that supply and nourish the retina. Now, this can lead to significant vision loss. So let's hear the good news first. Diabetic retinopathy often can be prevented with early detection, proper management of diabetes, and routine eye exams.
According to the International Diabetes Federation, IDF, the United States has the highest rate of diabetes among 38 developed nations, with approximately 30 million Americans.
That means that about 11% of the U.S. population between the age of 20 and 79 have the disease. And about 90% of Americans with diabetes have type 2 diabetes, which develops when the body fails to produce enough insulin. This causes glucose, that's sugar levels, in the bloodstream to rise and can eventually damage the eyes, kidneys, nerves, and heart. In the late stages of diabetic retinopathy, you may have blind spots or floaters.
One big problem is that only 18% diabetics are even familiar with diabetic macular edema, DME, a term that refers to swelling of the macula associated with diabetic retinopathy.
Not only that, nearly one-third of respondents to a survey said they don't get annual dilated eye exams recommended by the National Eye Institute for people with diabetes, and that could help protect against diabetes-related vision loss. Even though diabetics don't generally develop diabetic retinopathy until they have had diabetes for at least 10 years, don't wait that long for an eye exam.
Remember that diabetes mellitus causes abnormal changes in the blood sugar. Uncontrolled diabetes allows unusually high levels of blood sugar called hyperglycemia to accumulate in blood vessels.
This causes damage that hampers or alters blood flow to your body's organs, including your eyes. Abnormal spikes in blood sugar increases your risks of diabetic retinopathy.
We will continue with eye diseases, especially diabetic retinopathy, on the next show. But if we piqued your curiosity about this disease, you can learn more on the subject from several fine websites, including that of the American Diabetic Association and research sites.
I'd like you, our listeners, to know that I am one of several physicians right here in the Jacksonville area that has received the certification to recommend medical marijuana to those patients with certain qualifying diagnoses. These now include amyotrophic lateral sclerosis, cancer, Crohn's disease, epilepsy, glaucoma, HIV/AIDS, seizure disorders, chronic muscle spasms, multiple sclerosis, Parkinson's disease, PTSD, a terminal condition, as well as other ailments and conditions, including certain diseases with chronic or long-term pain. For more information, you can call our office at 641-4411. We have also set up a special website at CompassionateCareJax.com, where you can get a whole lot more information on medical marijuana. You can also set up an appointment for an office visit to Southside Medical Center right on the website. Again, that website is CompassionateCareJax.com. HeyDoc.com. Well, we've come to the end of another Hey Doc show. Carmen and I hope that you've enjoyed the past half hour and have found it interesting, educational, and maybe just a little bit entertaining.
So, from all of us here at Southside Medical Center, have a happy and healthy weekend. Goodbye.